The Mad Tech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, our weekly dive into the world of media, marketing and commerce. It's been a hot week in London. We've been hitting 40 degrees, so I'm delighted that we can do this podcast virtually. And today I'm joined by Sandy Gooman from Silver Bullet. Sandy, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, and thank you very much for having me today. And I'm really looking forward to these discussions.
Me too. Lovely to have you. I am also joined by my colleague Matt Broughton of ExchangeWire. Matt, welcome. Thank you for joining us as well.
Lovely to be here, John, and I'm very glad to be here without having to sit with a cold flannel on my head, as the temperature is now starting with a 2 rather than a 4.
Yes, agreed. It's been a sticky old week, but hopefully we'll have a cooler weekend ahead of us at least. It has been a big week in the world of media, marketing and commerce. Our first story for today is the slightly surprising move that Netflix have turned to Microsoft for their ad-supported subscription tier. Microsoft weren't the favourites to get the Netflix deal, but they have come through and it was announced this week. Greg Peters, the COO of Netflix, has said the company are excited to work with Microsoft to bring the new service to life and offer more choice for consumers and a premium, better than linear TV brand experience for advertisers. This comes on the back of Netflix's announcement this week that they have lost 1 million subscribers in the last quarter, which is obviously awful for them, but better than the 2 million that they did predict. So the ad-supported tier coming to life is no surprise. I suppose the two big questions that we're looking at today are, can the ad-supported tier save Netflix? They are in a world of increased competition. And obviously, yeah, hemorrhaging their subscribers. And also, what does this mean for Microsoft? Is this, how big of a deal is this for them? What can they offer in the AVOD area? Sandy, do you think this is too little too late for Netflix? Is this a bold move for them? What do you feel about it?
I feel as if it's a natural move for them, actually. You know, they're in a situation where subscriber rates are falling and there's plenty of reasons for that. If we look at changing consumer viewing behaviours, you know, we've come through a pandemic where people had a lot more time. They were spending a lot more time at home. They were spending a lot more time consuming content in different shapes and forms. And actually, you know, as we've come to a little bit of a normality, those viewing experiences and habits may well have changed. And at the same time, alongside, you know, the affordability is a big factor here from consumers. There's lots going on in the world and particularly in the UK as well. You know, the economy itself and consumer confidence, particularly with the world fairs that are going on, the energy crisis, for example, and the more recently the political turmoil as well. So consumer confidence and stability, I'd say, is really being pushed at the moment, and spending habits are also changing. What I would say though is they have yes they've got falling subscribers, but it's not, I wouldn't say it's necessarily losing subscribers to other content streaming platforms, especially when we look at the affordability side of things. And in terms of Netflix making that decision on wanting to drive new revenue streams through adverts in their content, that's a natural decision. And that probably is a little bit long time coming. However, obviously, their whole proposition has been around ad-free content and ad-free viewing experiences. For Netflix is around, the proposition is absolutely attractive for brands to advertise on because it is quite an engaging platform. So the new revenue streams, you know, they really need to be powered by data and insights, because at the same time, Netflix don't want to be jeopardizing their existing revenue streams even further. At the same time, within the marketplace, it provides a lot of choice for advertisers. You know, many advertisers will now be thinking about their decisions in terms of where they're placing their media spend based off data and insights. You know, the likes of ITV, Channel 4, Sky, etc. So there is another player now in the market as well. And And then most importantly, in order for Netflix, to me, it's around, they've got lots of data and insights, you know, internally around consumer and consumer viewing behaviours. It's really around now how they're actually going to leverage that data and insights. How are they going to be able to identify those subscribers that, you know, that are going to be, you know, further risk of churning, for example, and they don't want to lose those totally. So, yes, having an advertising revenue stream to give them, viewing experiences with advertising at a lower rate is the right kind of proposition. But they really also need to be thinking about how they're going to retain those customers that want that pure ad-free viewing experience, and they're not offering and jeopardising revenue with lower packages for them, for example. And most importantly, they'll need to be thinking about attracting new audiences as well. So data will really need also to be at the heart of their strategy for it to be successful. And the key is to really grow their subscriber base and bring that back on track as well. We can also touch on the technical capabilities as well, but, you know,
Yeah, I think you're right in terms of it's about striking a balance and bringing in that supported tier. Matt, how do you see it playing out? What do you think of the Netflix partnership with Microsoft?
Yeah, I think it's definitely the right move for them to go into AVOD, as it will support customers, like Sandy said, in terms of the cost of living crisis. There will be customers that want to watch Netflix content but can't afford what is now the most expensive streaming service. And it will also drive in the customers that just want to watch, okay, I just want to watch Stranger Things. I don't really care about watching any, you know, other Netflix content. So it'll bring in those kind of single show customers. In terms of their, you know, subscriber fall in their recent results, one of the questions around Netflix has been its growth outside of, you know, its core markets. And it had 23% growth in APAC and 19% growth in LATAM, which is obviously very encouraging for them. But that's also offset by the fact that they lost 2 million in the US and Canada alone. So it's just a case of how can they retain those customers in those core markets while retaining that growth outside. And I think adding in that AVOD tier will be helpful for that. In terms of how, you know, the partnership with Microsoft, it's definitely a coup for them. In the end, I think it's possibly a little bit of a no-brainer, given that obviously the other big tech companies, you know, the likes of Google and Amazon, they have their own streaming and CTV operations, so it would be, you know, a bit muddled and a bit complicated to go with them. And also other ad tech partners which have a bit more recognised operations within CTV, they obviously have their own existing arrangements with other streaming platforms, and it just makes it a lot easier for Netflix in terms of its negotiations with third-party content providers. You know, they don't have to have that muddled in their negotiations, right? You also have this deal with this other streaming and technology company, and it just makes it a bit clearer. It's interesting to see their COO saying it'll be a better than linear TV brand experience, given that CTV, you know, it's getting there, but in terms of its user experience, there are still questions that need to be answered there. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that side of things pans out.
Yeah, it's interesting to be talking about Microsoft as a small player entering an industry. This is a company that does have a $10 billion advertising revenue already, as much as that's dwarfed by the three major players. Sandy, on the technical side, what do you think of this as a deal for Microsoft? What does this bring to them? What does this offer to them as a company?
I think it's a massive deal for Microsoft. It just gives them a space in an area that they've not really played before, and actually, you know, their recent acquisition of Xandr kind of really makes sense now. It's almost like, you know, that was in mind to be able to, you know, with that acquisition and that ad serving capabilities, you know, they've now got something internally to be able to work with Netflix on, because, you know, let's face it, they're not a Google or a Comcast, and they don't, you know, other linear players have invested years of development to be able to get to where they are now. So it's almost in terms of their capabilities to be able to enable their audiences to be monetized and to have the right capabilities to serve targeted ads to their advertisers who are investing in their inventory. They're starting from scratch, really, and I feel like they've got quite a long way to go. to be able to get on par with the existing players out there that have invested huge amounts of development over the years and innovation. What I feel is it's going to be quite a long journey for them. You know, the speed to market will take time due to those developments. I mean, at the same time, let's recognise that Netflix is, they are a digital first platform. So they will have data and innovation at the heart to be able to drive and develop those capabilities. But actually, in terms of what they're wanting to launch and what they'll initially get off the ground, I kind of feel as if it will be an implementation that will enable an ad tech implementation, which will enable that to happen around being able to provide advertising on their platforms. But they need to build a roadmap around what that really looks like and how that evolves to be able to really, you know, fare against competition.
I think a lot of people on seeing the news have said, now the Xandr deal makes sense. It was announced in December last year. And it's interesting to see that it's come to fruition so quickly for Microsoft, that having that capability in their set has led them to land the Netflix deal. This is Netflix's attempt to diversify a little bit, to add a new tier. Have we reached peak TV in terms of the fragmentation of streaming services? Are people leaving Netflix because there's simply too many now to choose? You've got Disney Plus, you've got Paramount Plus. It seems that there's a plethora of choices. People on average are subscribing to 4 streaming services at least. And can this really help Netflix sort of regain their footholds? Do you think this is the way forward for them?
I think in terms of winning back subscribers they may have lost, if they use the data right and identify those that are being lost due to affordability, potentially yes. That I think this is a good way to be able to regain some of those and get back on track. In terms of the market share from across the other content streaming services, I think that's a big question and that's a big struggle because, you know, it is a very competitive landscape. I feel that subscribers that may have downgraded from Netflix, they're not necessarily investing that money in another platform. They are just saving their money on their overall household costs. So those that are looking for premium content services to give them, you know, seamless viewing experiences or a choice in terms of content, that's where I'd say that they really need to step up in terms of how they can attract new customers to be able to and subscribers that are actually, you know, they will search the market and content is key for them. And but there's a lot of competition out there. The market's pretty fragmented at the moment.
Yeah. Agreed. It'll be interesting to see how this deal plays out, whether these are new opportunities that Netflix can really exploit. Another streaming platform looking to exploit new opportunities for advertisers is Spotify, who have announced this week that they will be broadening their video podcasting capabilities. They will be rolling out their video podcast service to 6 new countries, to Brazil, to France, to Germany, Italy, Mexico, and Spain. These are the first non-English speaking countries to get this capability. Spotify first introduced the service in 2020 via their Anchor platform and was open to some creators in 2021. In a statement, Spotify said, "Video podcasts are a historically underutilized medium, but one that has the potential to grow by unlocking a new way to help audiences engage with their favorite podcasts." Matt, how do you see these new advertising opportunities playing out? Do you think that video podcasting is a medium that really has legs?
Yeah, I think it's a very sharp move by Spotify to roll this out. And it's no surprise to see them trying to make podcasts work harder for them, considering their kind of, you know, their hefty outlay on acquisitions within the podcasting space in terms of podcasting platforms, as well as licensing deals for individual shows. And for podcast creators, which prefer video alongside audio, this will make Spotify a much more attractive proposition for them, where previously they may have had to default to the likes of YouTube or Vimeo to get that video content across. And having those creators on board and engaged with Spotify will naturally make brands more interested, garner more subscriptions for Spotify, and make that advertising proposition more attractive. What is surprising to me is basically how long it's taken them to get there. They acquired Anchor back in 2019 and bought the license for, you know, famously the Joe Rogan Experience podcast in 2020. However, that specific podcast was running on YouTube, you know, for about 7 years prior and gaining a vast amount of attention, vast amount of views, vast amount of traction online. And given how, you know, the longer form, in-depth content on niche subjects, for example, Tiger King, how that was so in vogue during COVID, I think they may have missed a bit of the opportunity yet there. But yeah, overall, I think it's a very sharp move by them.
Interesting. Like you say, they've, you know, for years, Spotify have gone big on podcasting. They've invested an awful lot in that side of audio. Sandy, how do you see video complementing what Spotify already do? Can you see this as a real boom for advertisers?
Yeah, absolutely. And particularly if we look at the markets that they're looking to kind of expand this in, Brazil and Mexico particularly, for example, and we already touched on it in the Netflix conversation, and we're seeing this as well from Silver Bullet. They're actually really growing innovative markets. There's a lot of investment around ad tech and martech in those markets. So I actually think, and then hence, you know, consumer behaviours and consumer expectations and engaging with the platforms in those markets, they present real revenue streams both for advertisers as well in terms of placing some of their content within those as natively within those video podcasts. So both from a consumer consuming content audio or through video, or and we touched on it in Netflix as well. It's a growing market for them as well. But also, we are seeing a lot of innovation from businesses out there as well in terms of investing in martech and ad tech as well, and their investment in transformation. So I think it poses us quite a great opportunity both for the advertisers too, particularly in those regions as well. And as a proposition, again, I think it's a natural kind of move to evolve from audio and to also include video as well. And it is, again, a leading platform, particularly around podcasts. And it's a great opportunity for many, especially because it's offering, you know, going out to the new region. So I'm not surprised at all by this move and their decision from them.
Yeah, it's as you and both you and Matt have said, it seems like a natural move for them to make to add this new capability. Are Spotify not overstretching exactly, but are they stretching their own capacity with this? You know, they've moved from music into podcasting, put a lot behind that. Are they, do you think this is a solid move to keep diversifying their content, to keep bringing new formats involved? Are they stretching themselves too far? What do you think, Matt?
I don't think they're overextending themselves. We've seen them already dabble in video content on the music side in terms of running either concerts or, you know, live music recordings. And I think, you know, in terms of, like I said earlier, in terms of how deep they've gone in terms of podcasting, I think it's a natural move by them. In terms of whether they explore video content further than that, in terms of, you know, bringing more YouTube-esque content, I think that may be a bit more of an overextension, unless they can kind of have that proposition behind it. Why have they expanded into the space rather than going, are we going to do more video just for the sake of video? Spotify's traditionally been that very audio heavy platform. So I'm not sure people are going to naturally see Spotify as, okay, let's put Spotify on the telly and watch this particular show. I think they're, you know, other providers on the market will just have that more endemic presence at the moment.
Yeah. What do you think of that, Sandy? You agree?
Yeah, I think it's not a shock. And I think, you know, I don't think they're pushing themselves in on this either. I think it's a natural evolution of their propositions and their offerings. And you know, if we even look at the rise of podcasts, definitely in the last few years, it's a high storm, and I think it's a great, again, it's a great opportunity for them to invest in this, but not creeping onto, you know, across the parameters of actual content in terms of, you know, content to be consumed in terms of shows and things like that. I think podcast is it's an engaging platform on a one-to-one.
I think it's going to be, it'll be interesting to see how quickly advertisers want to get involved and how the platforms put together. So definitely one to keep an eye on. To our third story for the week, and Google have floated breaking up their ad unit to stave off regulatory pressure. This is something that our CSO, Kieran, predicted in his 2022 ad tech predictions, was that Google would end up having to spin off part of their advertising business. And it has been, seems like it might be actually coming this week. Google have offered to spin off part of their advertising business in the hopes of avoiding regulatory intervention. The proposal made to the US Department of Justice earlier this month would see the company break off the area that auctions off and places ads online, although it would remain under the ownership of Google's parent company, Alphabet. According to reports, it's unclear whether any proposal other than to sell off Google's ad auctions operation would satisfy the DOJ and prevent any legal action that it might be preparing to take to address the matter. This is not the first time that the search leader have offered concessions to appease regulators, but is, commentators note, a more comprehensive package aimed at nipping a potential antitrust suit in the bud. So could this be the actual start of the long-mooted breakup of Google's ad business? Sandy, how do you see this playing out for Google?
I don't think it's going to do Google any harm in terms of overall revenue, because actually all of it still wraps up into Alphabet. Ultimately, it's just more around how that's reported and how those individual kind of, you know, areas are going to be managed. But at the same time, you know, it's their workaround to, you know, around these suits and antitrust. But the question really is it going to be enough? Is it going to be enough to satisfy the DOJ? That's one of the questions that really, you know, is on people's minds as well. I absolutely agree. It's around, you know, protecting the industry, and it is a welcome step change from Google, and it's great to see them actually making that move to collaborate on this. But you know, they'll still also be wanting to protect their main revenue sources and revenue streams, and this is their first move towards that. I think the biggest thing is at least they're collaborating.
Yeah, I think you bring up an interesting point there in terms of whether this would appease the DOJ. Is this just, you know, is this a case of Google basically trying to mark their own homework before it's handed in? Are they trying to get ahead of what's already coming? Matt, how do you see this one?
Yeah, I think in terms of their offer just to, you know, spin it out into, but keep it under the Alphabet umbrella, it seems to be a bit of window dressing, really. Without that kind of structural separation and meaningful action, I don't think the DOJ would likely see that as the appeasement offer that it's intended to be. Just because WhatsApp is called WhatsApp rather than Meta doesn't mean it's not a Meta-owned, Meta-controlled and Meta-driven company. And I think that's what would be seen here in the case if they did spin, you know, the ad unit into a separate Alphabet-owned company. In terms of other regulatory action, I think they have a bit more kind of meaningful action. So, for example, we've discussed it previously on the podcast in terms of a settlement offer in Europe, which would enable third parties to sell via YouTube, opening up that platform. That's more meaningful than essentially what amounts to a bit of semantics. Similarly, in the US, the proposed piece of legislation, the Competition and Transparency in Digital Advertising Act, that also addresses it by, you know, looking at the entire advertising supply chain and mandating that companies with $20 billion across that entire supply chain cannot operate across both the buy and sell sides, as well as having an advertising exchange. So I think you know, whether this is actually an offer by them to stave off the DOJ, or whether it's a bit more kind of preemptive to say, we recognise that we may have to, you know, divest parts of our advertising business, and this is just an initial step to do so. I think the latter's a little more likely there.
Yeah. Sandy, in terms of what a breakup of Google's ad business would mean for the industry, would this be a net positive, do you think? Is this something that we should be looking for from a UK point of view as well?
I think it does definitely open doors for other digital ad companies to try and claim a piece of the market. I mean, but let's face it, there's still, you know, they're the three tech giants. They're still leading the digital advertising market in terms of their revenue shares. But actually, the slight diversification of this, it should hopefully increase a little bit of competition, and we would hope to lower the prices as well for advertisers, as rivals seek to kind of undercut each other to get the share of the revenue. So for advertisers, this could potentially be quite good news as well.
Yeah, I think as you say, with the three tech giants, this is one that's going to run and run. Apple are in their own, they across Europe having their own battles in terms of competition. But certainly one, it's an interesting start and interesting to see Google try and get ahead of the game in terms of regulation rather than chasing. So it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. Cool. We will move on to the second part of our podcast, which is about you, Sandy, and how you are at the moment and how things are going at Silver Bullet. What have you been seeing in the industry at the moment? What's come on your desk at the moment?
Firstly, I'm very well, thank you. And it's been an interesting, I'd say, 18 months or so, really. I guess I've been here at Silver Bullet for kind of just over 3 years now. And what I've really seen is, 3 years ago, we were seeing the tail end of like DMPs and businesses looking to really understand how they can leverage their data, connect CRM data with cookies and drive advertising. And actually, obviously, with all the regulations and the talk around the demise of cookies, that led to the demise of CDPs, which has really been at the forefront of what we've been seeing with our clients in the last 2 years. And interestingly, this year, what I'm really seeing is the evolution of the CDPs and how CDPs are actually being used with other marketing automation tools. So really joining up all the dots, so really connecting digital activation channels and CRM channels, all underpinned by data and insights, and really to inform those different customer touch points as well. We're definitely kind of seeing CDPs being like the central hub within a businesses, but connecting to various automation platforms as well. And having said that, what we're also seeing probably, and I've seen it a lot more in the last couple of months, is there's plenty of advertisers and brands out there that have been on this journey for a number of years themselves as well. So some of them are actually getting around to kind of reviewing their MarTech capabilities even further, and actually kind of need that validation in terms of what they set out to do in terms of their transformation journeys. And are they there? Do they need to make some further changes? Do they need to rethink about what other platforms they should be investing in, or do they continue evolving in the ones that they've already invested in as well? So we're seeing a lot of that at the moment too.
And how is that working hand in hand with the new reliance on first-party data, and how that's going to impact the industry? How are you seeing those changes come in?
Yeah, so we're seeing a lot more focus on first-party data. The recognition around actually the future is first-party data, and investing in the data and in ensuring that you have the right capabilities for those teams that need to access it, it's accessible and it can be activated on. We're definitely seeing a lot more focus on generating new data, leveraging all the different touch points to be able to generate data signals and drive insights from those, potentially turning those into models and audiences to be able to then easily activate into different channels as well. So there's a much bigger focus on first-party data. I definitely feel that many advertisers have kind of now woken up to the fact that first-party data is you need to have first-party data to be able to do targeted advertising marketing.
Yeah.
And to understand your data to then also inform acquisition strategies as well, in terms of what you know about your best performing customers and applying those traits to be able to find more of the same in terms of prospecting as well.
Yeah. And what are the other trends you're seeing for in among the clients that you work with? What are you seeing as the big talking points of 2022? How are you feeling about the industry?
Very positive about the industry. I'm seeing a lot more appetite for transformation across numerous verticals as well, and across different sized businesses. And what's really been quite satisfying and exciting for me is that a number of our big client engagements are actually led by quite strong women as well. So it's really good to see women being the voice of transformation internally within their businesses, but also working with the likes of Silver Bullet and the vendors, which tended to be pretty male dominated, and women are taking the reins on that, which is really great to see. And actually, not just on the customer side, but even internally within the skills that we're developing and recruiting, we've got quite a strong female-led talent pool as well, and we've set up a task force. Being female technical team to be able to take our clients through these journeys as well. So that's been quite exciting. Quite passionate about that area myself as well.
Yeah, no, that's really exciting to hear. And with our own ATS London conference, it was great this year to see that we could get so many women in leadership positions on stage. And I'm delighted that you're seeing that as a trend as well. It's the industry that's been in long need of that, I think. Is this something that you've seen a lot more of this year? Is the industry changing for the better in that sense, do you think?
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's definitely been over the last 12 months, just over 12 months or so. But if I really kind of sit back and think, okay, what are the big projects that we've been across, or some of the big wins that we've had? And I can honestly say a large proportion of them have been led by quite strong women within those brands. And so it is a move that we're seeing. It is a trend. Women are taking up those senior leadership roles within brands to influence and advocate. And get their buy-in and to be able to take them on the journey internally. So they're being a spokesperson for the boards within their organisations as well, which is great.
Brilliant. So a lot to be excited about for this year. I know we hear a lot of doom and gloom at the moment, and there's a lot going on. But it's nice to see that you have a positive outlook on how the next year is going to go.
Thank you. I do. And it's good to see the variety and the types of projects that are actually actually at the forefront of many, many advertisers' minds as well. So it's a great combination of strategy and technical capabilities, which I think is key too.
Excellent. Well, looking forward to keeping in touch with you and to hearing more about your work and Silver Bullet's work going forward. Sandy, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a really lovely chat. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me.
And Matthew, thank you as always for joining me.
Thank you, John. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you. Good to see you, Matt, as well.
That's all for this week. Thank you very much for joining us on the Exchange Wire Mad Tech podcast. We will see you next week. Thank you.